Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Indeed, it is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are once again here live on a Tuesday night. Crave Wrestling is so proud and so glad to host another episode of Pancakes and Power Slams. As Derek the Raw Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent would say, the new Tuesday night Titans. Isn't that right, Derek?
Yeah, that's right. This is Derek, the Raw, the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. And, hey, this is episode, what episode is this? 109?
Yes, it is.
Wow. That's 109 weeks of nothing but nonstop wrestling action. I always say it every week, 90 minutes is not enough to get all the wrestling talk that we want to get in to fulfill our wrestling wants and needs and trivia, all the good stuff that we like to talk about here tonight. Tuesday Night Titans, the new Tuesday Night Titans, Chris Featherstone, and of course, Pancakes Power Slams correspondent, Derek. Back to you, Chris.
Indeed. This is what it's all about. This is Pancakes and Power Slams. We have so much fun every week. And thank you all for continuing to support Pancakes and Power Slams throughout 109 episodes. I usually throw the plugs in at the end because of the time restraints, but I'm gonna spend a little bit of time just really plugging a lot of the people who help out, who sponsor, who's always, you know, been there for Pancakes and Power Slams or even been there in some capacity. Definitely want to give it up to WrestlingInc.com. Of course, I'm a writer for the WrestlingInc.com, and I've been a writer for Wrestling.com for about a year and a half now. I believe it was late 2000. And, wait a minute. It's been a year and a half now, and late 2012, if I'm not mistaken, is when I started writing for WrestlingInc.com. And then, of course, the Bleacher Report. I've been writing for the Bleacher Report for, this is actually my second year, this month, my second year writing for the Bleacher Report. Started there in April of 2012, not too far around the inception of Pancakes and Power Slams. And so definitely want to thank the Bleacher Report and Wrestling.com for continuing to allow me to broadcast and showcase and just promote the Pancakes and Power Slam show on the site while give them my thoughts in way of electronic writing. So just continuing to be very thankful, very grateful for writing for both of those sites, and just the love that they show me, and just the fanfare that Pancakes and Power Slams of Crave Wrestling, and just the people who really support me. If you go to my profile on Bleacher Report, all the people who love my writing, all the comments that people have on my profile page, and, of course, all the comments that people have on my articles when I write them, every single comment, whether it be good or bad, I appreciate the time that you invest in actually reading my writing and spending the time to comment on it. So thank you very much. All of the commenters, all of the readers, all of the writers, be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter, at Crave Wrestling, so we can continue to talk wrestling for as long as we like wrestling, which is, for the most of us, all of our lives, and we will continue to like it for all of our lives. So continue to support me in my endeavors. And, of course, wearewrestling.net. They just continue to support Crave Wrestling. So I'm just very thankful, very grateful for continuing to, and just all the people who've supported and sponsored Crave Wrestling all throughout the 109 episodes, all the all the superstars that have been on the show throughout the 109 episodes. We are just getting started. 109 episodes, and the fire is a-blazing, and we will continue to be one of the hottest Tuesday night shows that pro wrestling can get. 347-884-8452. I see the chat room starting to liven up. And speaking of that, let's challenge the chat room. Let's challenge the chat room. Let's ask a King of the Ring question. Who won the 1994 King of the Ring? Who won the 1994 King of the Ring? I know that's not necessarily an icebreaker question, but hey, we've a lot of people who listen to the show are avid wrestling fans, and so hey, that's what it's all about, man. I usually ask a nice little icebreaker question, but this one is going to be a bit tougher. So, King of the Ring, 1994, 20 years ago, the King of the Ring, event was in June of 1994, and it was a very interesting push for someone. And someone, chat room said Bret Hart, and that is incorrect. You're a year off. Bret Hart won the 93 King of the Ring, not the 1994 King of the Ring. So keep trying. 347-884-8452, live trivia, or go on Crave Wrestling and let us know your thoughts there, to be said live on there. Got a lot of cover today. We got a really, really fun flavor of the week. Of course, yes, Owen Hart, great job. Owen Hart was the winner of the 1994 King of the Ring. And we will be doing the Extreme Rules predictions, as always. And we will also be doing the Flavor of the Week. And the Flavor of the Week is the top 10 heels of the 1980s, the top 10, from 10 to 1. We're not just going to throw out 10 heels. We're going to give you Crave Wrestling's top 10 heels of the 1980s. Now, this, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be very fun. After over 100 Flavor of the Week topics, this is one of the best. Yes, this absolutely. This is special, and I'm really excited to delve into the Flavor of the Week topic. So let's get started. On to Raw. Start off with a John Cena promo. A John Cena promo. That's quite normal for a Raw show. This time it was interrupted by a kids' choir, and then it was interrupted by Bray Wyatt as they were singing, "He's got the whole world in his hands, he's got the whole world." And then all of a sudden, and all of a sudden, the children's choir starts coming down to the ring with Bray Wyatt. The lights go off, the lantern goes off, and then it comes back on with a bunch of kids in the sheep mask. So, and then John Cena looking bewildered and defeated. So we'll go to the Extreme Rules results or predictions here at the end of the show. But I don't know. It seems like Bray Wyatt has had the mental advantage against John Cena still. But I'm telling you, Derek, I've said this before, there's just something not clicking for me with this feud. I'm just not interested.
Nobody's interested. I mean, look how much time they had to spend on that children's choir. I mean, that went on forever. And, yeah, it's kind of creepy. It got old quick. And it was a time waster, time filler. The feud's stupid. John Cena just looks awkward, pathetic, just pretending that he's mad. It just doesn't work. I mean, it just, yeah, the whole thing is just a bust. And I wish they'd just kind of go away from it, forget it ever happened.
Yeah, and I really hope. I tell you what, after Sunday, after Extreme Rules, we do not need to see John Cena and Bray Wyatt. I'm not going to leak my predictions, but I will throw this out there. If Bray Wyatt somehow does defeat John Cena at Extreme Rules, that is not going to be a good thing, because there's a really good chance that come Payback in June, oh boy, we might see a Cena-Bray rubber match, and that's going to be rough if we see that. So I sure hope we don't see more of Cena-Bray after Extreme Rules. We'll see. And we'll get to the predictions to see if Derek and or I feel as if this feud will culminate at Extreme Rules. We'll see that here soon. Next trivia question. What was the Ultimate Warrior's name in World Class Championship Wrestling? And what singles title did he hold? Dingo Warrior, good job. What singles title did he hold? What singles title did he hold in World Class Championship Wrestling? I've said this before in previous show. I just absolutely love the World Class Championship Wrestling theme song. I think it's just an amazing song. So, just a little sidebar there. Dingo Warrior is the correct answer. The answer for the singles title has not been correctly said yet. So, here we go. Let's go to the next one here. We have Usos and Ryback. I'm going to tell you what, this match was actually a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And I'm starting to get on the supportive side of Ryback. I've said it many, many weeks that I'm a fan of the tag team division. I love a good tag team division. It's very necessary in the overall fabric of professional wrestling. And I really like the Usos' run. It's really good. Their feud with Ryback and Curtis Axel actually makes a, not necessarily a formidable tag team, but not well polished either, but them two together isn't as bad as it was. And the little mini push that they gave them to be legitimate threats for the Usos and defeating both of them in singles matches, I'm okay with that. And the match actually was pretty decent. I would have hoped that it would have carried over to Extreme Rules, especially seeing how there's no tag team title match for Extreme Rules. But it was a good match for Raw. It was a good match on Raw, and the end of it, the finish was really good when Curtis Axel went for the perfect plex and ended up getting a Uso splash. It was a high octane match and delivered and was better than I thought. So I was totally fine with the match and was very happy with what I saw.
Yeah, I was happy. And again, I said this last week, Ry Bassel, they finally figured out what to do with these two guys. On their own, they just weren't able to cut it. But now, I mean, they're impressing me. They're great. And it's against the Usos. Again, that was a high-octane match. It was a great match. Usos came out the victors, which was, I could have seen it coming, but anyway, they put on an excellent, stellar show. And Ry Bassel, I mean, I'm kind of smirking when I see them come out because it's clicking for the two of them, and it's making tag team division a little more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but I'm a big fan of mashup theme songs. There's some that hasn't been the best, but for the most part, I'm a big fan of mashup theme songs. I really liked Jericho's theme song, Crank the Walls Down. I liked Rated RKO's mashup with Edge and Randy Orton's theme song mashed up together. I liked the Brothers of Destruction's mashup. I liked the Rose Brothers mashup a lot. And now I like Curtis Axel and Ryback's mashup theme. And yeah, it kind of seems like Nintendo cheesy a little bit, but at the same time, I do like how it kind of fits both of their characters and it gels well together. Of course, you have the Mr. Perfect type theme song of Curtis Axel blending in the Meat on the Table theme song of Ryback. So I'm a big fan of it. I like it. And I think it was a good touch to their chemistry as a tag team. And hey, I mean, here's the thing. I honestly wouldn't be opposed to Ryback winning the tag team championships probably in a month or so, and then the Usos chasing them until SummerSlam. I think the Usos, I would totally be a fan of the Usos having a very long tag team title run, but that doesn't happen much in the WWE. I think that the Usos would be the perfect team to do that because they put on such good matches. They kind of remind me of a bigger version of Paul London and Brian Kendrick back in the mid-2000s when they were the tag team champions. And I was a big fan of Paul London and Brian Kendrick when they were champions. And they were champions the better part of a year. They almost had a demolition run. And I definitely think that the Usos can just go through a revolving door of number one contenders and actually have the title for a long time. But I actually, you know, but on the other side of the coin, I'd be okay with them chasing the titles into a big pay-per-view, into a SummerSlam or something like that. Would you be for or against Ryback winning the tag team titles and keeping them as the Usos chase them to a big pay-per-view?
That wouldn't be so bad, would it? So far, so good.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. I think Ryback would be a decent, they'll be a decent team to have it. So, yeah, I'd be okay with the chase. Warlord and the Barbarian. the Powers of Pain.
Yes, exactly. Who was their manager?
Yeah. It was Slick, wasn't it?
I think it was for a while.
Was it Fuji?
I think it was both.
I agree. Because I know it was Fuji because Fuji did the double turn. He was the manager of Demolition, and it was like a double turn, Powers of Pain against Demolition, and Fuji ended up turning on Demolition and going with the Powers of Pain, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Then somehow Slick obtained him in like a poker match, I think, or something.
Yeah. So that was the managers of the old WWE, just absolutely amazing. Slick was a really he was a really good manager, man. I really think that a lot of people overlooked Slick being a manager, but he had some really good mic work, and I really think that we actually saw him on Raw. I think it was not too long ago, the Raw 1000. I think he was like, yeah, he was the wedding between Daniel Bryan and AJ. he was presiding. He was the minister over that wedding. So that was quite interesting. But yeah, Slick was he was a sleeper, man, and I definitely think that he was one of the best managers of in WWE history. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely Slick, Jive Soul Bro.
That's
right. He had his own theme song, a manager. I mean, you know, how often does that happen? So,
yeah.
Definitely. He was awesome on the mic. He was like a New York slick talking pimp type of guy or somebody, but I always enjoyed him. What you talking about, ladies?
Yeah. Right, exactly. thank you, Crave Wrestling Administrative Team. A slight correction. Slick was with when the Powers of Pain split, the Warlord ended up being managed by Slick, and the Barbarian ended up being managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan. Close. It was just about close. But as far as the Fuji thing, it was correct. Survivor Series, he turned on Demolition, and it was 88, Survivor Series 88, he turned on Demolition and aligned with the Powers of Pain. So, yeah, really, Powers of Pain was a sleeper tag team. They never really launched in the WWE as much as they should have. I mean, the Warlord and the Barbarian, and I've said this before, I think the Barbarian is one of the best big men in pro wrestling history. That kick that he did was just absolutely amazing. And just the agility that he had, and when he was with Paul Jones, I remember his finishing move was like a top rope clothesline or shoulder block. It was really agile for his size, and I've always been a big, even in the 80s, I was a big fan of the Barbarian for some reason. And then when he feuded with Hogan in the early 90s, I really think that he had the potential to be a big name, but they really didn't do much with him, and he just kind of coasted in the tag team division, even when he was in the WCW with the Faces of Fear and then the New Head Shrinkers. And, you know, when he was with Paul Jones' Army, I think that was some of his best days. And the early 90s when he was with Heenan, that was some of his best days too. But I was a big fan of Barbarian. I never wonder why they never decided to give him the rub, because he definitely had what it took. He could have been a good feud with Hulk Hogan, but
I'll take the Warlord.
Really? Yeah, I think the Warlord had the intimidating look. He was just a freak of nature. I agree with that. I think that the Warlord could have drew with Hogan, but the Barbarian was a much better wrestler, though.
I don't know. They were too gimmicky. That's the thing.
I think the Warlord was more gimmicky than the Barbarian. Like, the Barbarian, I remember he had the little furry shoulder pads and the face paint. And, I mean, he was just a mean, just a legitimate threat, you know, of a character. But the Warlord was more like, I'm going to flail my arms and show how massive I am. He was more gimmicky to me. I think that he could have been like a flash in the pan pay-per-view opponent for Hogan, like Earthquake, you know, was for a second, and you know, just one of those type of people. But I don't think it could have lasted. But you know, early '90s, I'd say, probably around '90, actually, they could have done something with the Warlord and Hogan. I think that would have drew.
Where else are you going to hear this kind of banter, this kind of talk, other than Pancakes and Power Slams? 347-884-8452. This is what we talk about. We just go on tirades about things. So,
absolutely.
This
week,
talking about Powers of Pain. So.
That's right.
This is what we
this
do.
This week, the Powers of Pain, Slick, and Mr. Fuji. Yeah, it's always fun, man. Just like Derek said, we go on tirades, and it's just the passion of pro wrestling, man. That's what it's all about. It's just fun and exciting, and you can always. It's funny how every week we just kind of start with Raw, and we just get off format and kind of derail a bit and go into something retro, and it's always fun. This week somehow. We went to the road of Slick and Mr. Fuji and the Powers of Pain. I think that all stemmed from the Usos. Yeah, they all stemmed from the Usos being tag team champions. So how about that? Lots of fun as always. Next we get to Sheamus defeating Titus O'Neil. For some reason they wanted Titus O'Neil to just beat the heck out of Sheamus. And then Sheamus do like a last-minute bro kick. I still don't see the point of doing this. Titus O'Neil, I think he missed the bus. I think he missed his train. And I don't see any type of legitimate heel run by Titus O'Neil. I don't see it. I said before, I think he would have been a good opponent or a good contender for Big E's Intercontinental title. I really think he would be a better choice than Bat News Barrett, because Barrett's been Intercontinental champion 3 times, and none of those runs were very good. So I think Titus O'Neil, if they really wanted to break him away from Darren Young, give him a mid-card championship. Give him a mid-card title. Have him beat Big E, although I don't like it, although I'm a big Big E fan, but have him beat Big E for the Intercontinental Championship, or have him go against Dean Ambrose for the U.S. title and have the Authority or the Evolution assist Titus O'Neil indirectly in winning the title. You can put a mid-card title on Titus O'Neil if you really want him to break out of turning heel and breaking away from his team. You could have done that, and he's, you know, he's a hopscotch game away from 40, and I definitely think it's about time for him to make some type of impression instead of making this heel turn and then losing after winning a few matches and then losing all the time. So he's got something going on with Sheamus right now. You know, if somehow they throw that on Extreme Rules and have him beat Sheamus, I'd be okay with that. But it doesn't really seem like – it doesn't – the potency of him being a mid-card heel – has almost entirely vanished, and they missed the boat with that one for sure.
I almost forget who Titus O'Neil is. I see him come out last night and beat up on my guy Sheamus. I'm just like, hey, what's going on? He got the best of Sheamus before that, and then he gets sneak attacked, and then he loses. Are you kidding me? What was this? What's this going to make? I mean, it just makes Titus look like a moron. I mean, what would you think, being in his boots? I have to go out and do this. Yeah. In front of millions of people. And, I don't, is anything going to stand? Is this going to be a feud? Because it could be a legitimate feud, but I think that what happened on Raw just really pretty much extinguished what anything that could happen. Everyone would be like, hey, remember when Titus O'Neil, he lost in no time after the bell rang? Forget what happened before that.
Exactly. Yeah, you said it very good right there. So, well, the bad news is that the Wizards has dethroned and knocked out the Bulls. That's quite unfortunate.
Oh,
what's that?
The Blue Jackets, they lost.
Yeah, they lost. But
I'm not a hockey fan, but they really put up a fight last night.
They did. Yeah, they did. I'm a Blue Jackets fan as well. But, I'm a bigger Bulls fan. A lot of people know I'm a huge Bulls fan. And it hurts me to
know. Michael Jordan, he owns the Wizards, doesn't he?
Yes. Well,
and if I'm not mistaken, he played for the Bulls, correct?
He did.
Do I live under a rock?
No. No, I think that you've hit him for sure. I think that you are pretty accurate. But yeah, 4-1. They only won one game. The Bulls only won one game, and they lost 75-69. And unfortunately, no more Bulls. So, hopefully that causes the Bulls to actually get a leader. Derrick Rose is so injury prone, and the Bulls just need a good leader. So, but they don't have it. They came close. They only lost by 9 a couple days ago, and tonight they lost by 6. So, too many close calls, but they just couldn't pull it out, man. It's just really sad day for me that my Bulls are out of the NBA Finals. But it's okay. Onward to Dolph Ziggler introduces Hugh Jackman as we remember a Raw nearly 3 years ago. And it's so crazy how time flies. That was almost 3 years ago that Jackman was on Raw and cold-cocked Dolph Ziggler as he was going against Zack Ryder. But 3 years later, Dolph Ziggler's a face, the hatchet's buried, and then here comes Damian Sandow dressed in a poor man's Magneto costume. I mean, he really seemed like he got that from some type of garbage disposal, some type of garbage dump. And that segment, it just went way over. It really went way over. And thank you, chat room, for making it a little bit easier for me. Someone said, "Doubles." For many who know me well knows that I'm a very avid 80s and early 90s Saturday Night Live fan. And you know, of course, they would have the segment with Doubles and the Bears, Dicka, Doubles, and big Chris Farley fan, and and he would have the stake, and he would, you know, have the fake heart attacks, although that's not very funny, but and all in satire, it was comical. And so to see the bullsh on the chat room, it makes it a little better. Thank you for continuing to type that in. A certain Coach Ditka. Yeah, it was that makes a baker's dozen. The chat room is hitting some home runs right now. Thank you for that line. That was the perfect line that I needed to see with my Bulls losing. So, but the segment with Hugh Jackman and Dolph Ziggler and Damian Sandow, it wasn't a bad segment, because I understand that they were promoting the X-Men movie, which seems like it's actually a good movie. But just the whole Magneto thing, the mic, throwing the mic, the Magneto costume, the Damian Sandow promo, it was just a little bit too much for me.
That whole thing was stupid. And I said something last week and the week before about how WWE, they always have to do some kind of funny skits like they've always done, make people laugh. But this was dumb. I mean, the Magneto outfit looked like something I could have put together in 2 hours. It was, it was horrible. And just Hugh Jackman being on there, great. I remember when didn't Raw used to always have like a special guest, or what they call that? They'd always have a celebrity come out.
Yeah, they would have the guest host.
Well, they need to stop doing that, because it does nothing. So.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they stopped doing it weekly, because they would be like they would have like GM powers, and. It was. I understand they try to do the crossover thing and try to bring more of a crossover feel to it. It was, you know, as far as a PR move is concerned, that's where my undergrad is in, public relations. So as far as a PR move, it wasn't a horrible PR move. But there's certain things that you shouldn't do that dilute the overall. The overall feel, the overall fabric, so to speak, again, of professional wrestling. There's just certain things that you shouldn't do that continue to dilute it and continue to bring people in that I'm sure barely knows a thing about wrestling. Just bringing them in every week, in and out, I don't think that was a good idea. So I'm glad that they don't do that anymore. But I understand Hugh Jackman. It's been reported that Hugh Jackman has been an avid wrestling fan when he was, you know, since he was a kid. So, people who are actually wrestling fans, I'm okay with that. When they had Jeremy Piven there 1 week as a guest host, it seemed like he was having a ball. It seemed like he was actually a wrestling fan. So, the actual wrestling fans that come, Shaq was another one. He's a wrestling fan, and when he had the face off with the Big Show. So, you know, people who are actually wrestling fans, I'm okay with bringing them in here and there. But every week, just random people, no, not so much. Next, we have Cesaro defeating Jack Swagger. I really hope that they do away with this. Now, they do have, they did make this into a triple threat, which I'm glad that they didn't do Cesaro against Swagger at the pay-per-view. I'm glad that they threw in RVD, because first of all, it's a good spot for RVD, and second of all, it's still heel versus heel, Cesaro versus Swagger. So RVD is the perfect fit for a feud like this, because I just didn't want to see it. And adding RVD, who's actually a babyface in the feud and actually has history with Paul Heyman, makes a lot more sense. So the match was decent, but just them two feuding against each other alone, I'm not buying it.
Now, how could you buy it? It just doesn't make any sense. It's boring. There's no way. I mean, Cesaro is miles ahead of Swagger.
Yeah.
Same thing. Gunther and Paul Heyman. I mean, if they're going to have the match on SmackDown, then have it again on Raw. What would be the point of having it on a pay-per-view? We've already seen it twice. It's nothing. Cesaro has definitely got the upper hand. I mean, it's ridiculous. Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty should have had a better run than these two guys.
That's a good point, because actually Michaels was Intercontinental Champion not too far after his heel turn. So next we have Alberto Del Rio defeating Cody Rhodes, a clean win here. But dissension within the Rhodes brothers. Why are they doing this? You finally revived the tag team division after so many years of it being just totally pointless and worthless and futile. You finally revived the tag team division, and the Rhodes brothers was one of the teams who actually brought interest into the tag team division when the Shield had it for a long, when the Shield had the titles for a while. The division started to get flat, and even before then, when Team Hell No had it, it was a good spark of a feud, of an angle with Team Hell No. It was okay, but it wasn't exceptionally exciting. But when the feud with the Rhodes brothers and the Shield, when that commenced, that really brought a whole different level to the tag team division. Now, for some reason, it seems like the WWE is going the route of turning Cody back heel, and what is that going to do? That is just a bad idea. To me, it seems like it's WWE's admission of saying, yeah, we weren't creative enough to have Cody Rhodes be a successful singles babyface. And so now we're going, and it's actually a well-polished, really, really good tag team. It's better for the Rhodes brothers to just to stay a tag team than for them to split up. Because what happens when they split up? At this point, there's only a handful of people that's even going to smell the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, let alone have it. Or capture the title. And then as far as a mid-card title, Cody Rhodes has been Intercontinental Champion before. A U.S. title run or do what? And so it's just not a good idea to split the team. It's really, really not a good idea. And if you are going to split it, why didn't you do it for WrestleMania? It's just, it's mistimed. It's misdirected. It just has no point to it. And I really hope that eventually this causes the Rhodes brothers to be stronger, because I really don't want to see some random where we're not a team anymore, we're going to have a match at a random pay-per-view, and then you're going to go your way, I'm going to go mine. Goldust will probably wallow in the mid-card, job to a few people, and become an NXT agent. While Cody Rhodes would probably have some decent mid-card feud, maybe, and then eventually job out to people too. So I don't see any type of promise for this breakup.
Man, I don't either. And I had a whole script written about this thing, and you just said everything. So thanks a lot. But anyway, that's what I get. So... They'll say, yeah, what are they going to do? I mean, there's nothing. I don't want to see them split. I mean, who would win between the two? They'd probably push Cody Rhodes to win. And, again, Gold Dust would just become a mid-card, whatever. They're so much better just staying together for the time being. And it's – they make the tag team division great, along with Ryback, so along with the Usos. I mean, they could really potentially make a huge impact on the tag team division. The WWE could make a huge impact on tag team division just because they'll have some solid contenders. So keep them together, WWE. I'm begging you. Keep them, the Rhodes brothers, together. Makes no sense to break them up because none of them have anywhere to go.
There you go. Totally couldn't have said it any better. Absolutely. Next we have Alexander Rusev Nemanja, defeating Xavier Woods by disqualification as a result of R-Truth coming in. We'll get to the predictions of this random, pointless handicap match that is scheduled for Extreme Rules, but, there's no way that Xavier Woods would have won anyway, so at least getting the Truth and Xavier Woods some type of upper hand leading into Extreme Rules is going to make it seem like there's some type of chance that they're going to defeat Xavier Woods, they're going to defeat Alexander Rusev, but I don't need to, I don't even have to wait until our prediction segment. There's no way that they're going to beat Rusev. They're pushing him very heavily right now, and this is just a waste of time to me. Of course, it's making Rusev look better by defeating, two decent opponents. I like R-Truth. He's a really good wrestler. Xavier Woods is a good wrestler, too. I was a big fan of his. Well, I was a fan of his when he was in TNA. He was a tag team champion. And, Xavier Woods and R-Truth are decent, to be fed to Rusev. But it really doesn't make Rusev look that much better, to be honest with you. And I really don't see the point of using those two to make Rusev over. It would make so much more sense for them to actually use someone worthwhile, like a Sheamus or a even a Cody Rhodes or something, someone like that to feud against Rusev. But this is just, I really don't have any type of excitement about Rusev at all.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has excitement about Rusev. What are they going to do with him? He's just another throwaway opponent. I mean, maybe have him feud with Mark Henry. But again, that's not going to do anything.
It wouldn't be a bad idea.
It wouldn't be a bad idea, but it wouldn't do anything for either one. So, and with the Xavier Woods and Rusev, there's not much to say about the guy yet. I'm not too sold on him being a staying force, but I don't know. Put him in a few good matches, see what happens with him.
I actually think it's a good idea. I mean, thinking about it even more, I think him and Mark Henry that'll make a good feud. The only problem is Mark Henry is just so irrelevant now. I mean, he's been booked so poorly that will he really help Rusev at all? So we'll see. I don't think Kali would do much of anything either. Like I said, I think him and RVD would be good. I think Rusev and Sheamus could work. Do we see Rusev and Cena? Maybe if Cena puts over Rusev, if he puts over Rusev, I'll be okay with it, though.
Probably not. I don't think so. I mean, Rusev, I will give him what he can take, but he's not ever going to be champion.
That's a bold prediction. Next, we have Slater and McIntyre defeating Los Matadores. Finally, 3MB wins a match. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, finally they win a match, but again, it was pretty much based on the little wrestler. So, WWE trying to be funny and it's boring.
Yeah, and now we're having a WLC match at Extreme Rules. How clever! Stephanie McMahon in the ring apologizes to Daniel Bryan, invites him out. And then he comes out with Brie, and he goes back and forth with Daniel Bryan. Eventually we see, Stephanie kind of wants to make amends, and basically her way of attempting to do that was giving Brie Bella a Divas Championship, which led to a match between her and Paige that ended up with Kane coming from underneath the ring and trying to abduct Brie, chokeslams Daniel Bryan. Brie Bella gets away and tends to her man. I think it was a good twist heading to their match at Extreme Rules on Sunday. I actually think this is a good feud heading into Extreme Rules. Extreme Rules is a throwaway pay-per-view. Essentially, it is. I mean, I think that the card looks a lot more solid than WrestleMania 30. It has the potential to be a more solid pay-per-view than WrestleMania 30. But we don't see much happen as far as big title changes or anything like that. Last year, we saw Brock and Triple H at a steel cage match, which was a pretty decent match. And the year before that, we saw Brock Lesnar and John Cena, which was a surprisingly good match. So we'll have that good match. We'll have a solid card, but nothing drastic as far as title changes. So putting Daniel Bryan in a feud with Kane for Extreme Rules, it fits Kane's persona, Extreme Rules. It fits that, and I'm okay with it. I think it's a good way to make Daniel Bryan look like a more fighting champion, and this is the perfect pay-per-view to do that. So I'm on board with it.
Yeah, I'm on board with it. I mean, what was cool about that is when Kane came out of the canvas. That was great. I enjoyed that a lot. It was a bit cheesy. He didn't even get to pull anyone under, which is kind of weird. But kind of paying homage to The Undertaker. And are we ever going to see The Undertaker again? I was just thinking about that. Is this it? I don't know what they done.
But I'd be okay if we don't.
Me too.
Yeah, I'd be okay if we don't.
Never want to see Hogan again.
Hogan I'm okay with. I think, like I said before, I think Hogan's got a really good spot. We don't see too much of him. And then when we see him, it satisfies our nostalgic taste buds. And so they're not oversaturating Hogan, which I think is a fantastic idea. So he's being very properly used.
Yeah, he's being used good. And again, The Undertaker. But again, the Kane coming out of the match, that was great. I mean, that really added spark to it. Even though, again, it was kind of pointless because he didn't drag anyone under, so what was the point of it? Is what I guess I'm getting at.
I guess the intimidation. So next we have Bad News Bear defeating RVD, winning the Intercontinental Championship Tournament, going against Big E at Extreme Rules. During the match, we saw distraction by Cesaro, and then Cesaro attacking RVD post-match, and then Swagger attacking Cesaro and RVD, and then RVD somehow rebounding and taking out Swagger, and then Frog splashes Cesaro. I actually think this was a good build-up, too. It was a bit confusing, but it was a good build to their triple threat match at Extreme Rules. And I actually think that this match could be a sleeper match. And I think this has the potential to be one of the most thrilling match, I'll say exhilarating and thrilling matches of the night. All three of these wrestlers are good in the ring, and they know how to have big spots. And this has the potential to be one of the, if not the best match of the night.
I could see it being the best match of the night. I mean, especially on Bad News Bears showing a lot. I mean, RVD last night, he kind of got interrupted a bit. But overall, I thought it was an excellent match. I mean, RVD can still tangle with everybody. Bad News Barrett, I'm starting to like him again a bit. And we'll see where he gets with Biggie Langston. I think Biggie will probably still overall, I don't want to go to the predictions yet. But anyway, moving on.
Moving on to Randy Orton against Roman Reigns. I was hoping that we had a clean win by Roman Reigns. I really was hoping that we had that, but we didn't. We had Flair coming out and praising Evolution and then turning around and endorsing the Shield, surprisingly. And then eventually the match was thrown out due to Evolution taking out the Shield during the match, and then Shield rebounding, and then Evolution retreating. I think it was a good ending to the paper. It was a good ending to Raw, and it makes it seem as if this six-man match would be the main event of the pay-per-view, which I would actually be okay with.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was surprised to see Ric Flair come out. No one really saw that come unless you read the cheat sheet. But Reigns, Orton, and just to have the Shield against the Evolution, or I'm sorry, Evolution. I mean, Ric Flair shook hands with the Shield. That was exciting. I thought that was a great spot for Ric Flair to come out and spread his swagger, get paid. And so good for that. That was a great ending to Raw, just to see that happen.
What was Ken Shamrock's nickname in the WWE? What was Ken Shamrock's nickname in the WWE?
What was his phrase?
All right.
Get out of my zone.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a few screws short of a toolbox when he was in the WWE. And then I remember that one time when he was feuding with British Bulldog. And British Bulldog put some dog food in his face, and he just went berserk and started belly-to-belly suplexing everybody in sight. And it was quite weird. But, yeah, I mean, they booked him as some nutcase, and he did a good job at it. I think I liked Ken Shamrock in the WWE, actually, especially when
he was
Intercontinental Championship. Yeah, I liked him.
Was phenomenal in the WWE. I mean, that was the best I could ever remember, Ken Shamrock. UFC or WWE,
yeah.
He was an awesome character.
He was. I think initially he was when he became Intercontinental Champion, and then when he started teaming up with when he went with the corporation and went heel and started teaming up with the Big Boss Man and actually became tag champions with him, and it was a bit odd when he had that. But the feud that he had with Steve Blackman was pretty good, and so I think that they had, I think that the feud that he had with Owen Hart was good too. So Steve Blackman's?
Yeah, what was his nickname?
The Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon, Steve Blackman.
Lethal Weapon. And he had some really cool theme music, too. I remember his theme music kind of sounded like a bunch of maracas. It was pretty interesting. His first music was very bland, but eventually it was the first music was more like a da da ba da 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 ba 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 da 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 da, and it was just very bland and just kind of lifeless. And then when he got the other one, like the drums and the maracas, I think it was a pretty cool addition to his gimmick. And so, yeah, I think our administrative team actually have that theme song. You guys got it? What we got? Stuff. Thank you, guys. Yeah, it was pretty interesting theme song that really showed that he was about his business. So he ended up being a pretty good character. Didn't do too much with him as far as a singles push. I think the height of his career was with Al Snow when they were Head Cheese.
Head Cheese.
Yeah.
I forgot that.
Head Cheese. So, yeah, man, that was some. Yeah, yeah, that theme song was hilarious as well. Yeah. All right, real quick to SmackDown. Check out my SmackDown review on WrestlingInc.com every week. Real quick, great debate, Jeff Coulter versus Paul Heyman. That was pretty funny. Cesaro defeating Swagger again. And I was a really big fan of SmackDown. The Shield just came out and just – they were originally scheduled to have 11-on-1 match, handicap match, and they just started beating up their opponents before the main event match. So they didn't even they condensed it down to 5 and beat them. So I was a big fan. Powerbomb and Fandango, your boy, through the table, taking out Swagger, taking out Brad Maddox, taking out 3MB. It was great. Taking out Axel. Good stuff. So Tamina Snuka beats Natalya. Curtis Axel defeats Jey Uso. Then we get more Bray Wyatt, more dissension with the Rhodes brothers as they lose to Harper and Roman. And then the Shield defeating Titus O'Neil, Ryback, Alberto Del Rio, Wade Barrett, and Damian Sandow. As far as Impact Wrestling concerned, didn't get to had a very, very busy weekend, so I didn't get to get the Impact Wrestling review in this week, but of course, real quick, I'll let you know my recap on Impact Wrestling. Magnus in-ring promo. It calls out Abyss, fires him. MVP comes out and offers him a full-time spot if he beats Magnus. Kurt Angle defeating Rockstar Spud. EC3 attacking Kurt Angle. And then Willow coming out and making the save. Madison Rayne and Beautiful People segment. Bobby Lashley defeating Kenny King by count out, MVP defeating Austin Aries. That was a pretty good match. Storm and Rue defeating Bully Ray and Gunner. Beautiful People defeating Madison Rayne and Gail Kim. And then Abyss defeating Madness by DQ. And, of course, we had Sacrifice this week, this weekend, where Kurt Angle defeated defeated EC3, and then Kurt Angle and Willow against EC3 and Rockstar Spud. They won, and then Eric Young retaining his title, and kudos to Velvet Sky breaking a record, becoming 6-time Knockouts champion. So very lethal tables match with Bobby Roode and Bully Ray. Roode pulled that one out, and then Gunner pulled out a really good match against James Storm. And I really like how James Storm is putting over Gunner. Gunner is an amazing talent. I really like him in the him in TNA. And Sam Shaw losing again to Ken Anderson. I was thinking that they would put over Sam Shaw. I like Ken Anderson, but I was thinking that they would put over Sam Shaw, but I guess that they realized that his character is just kind of too eerie for people to really understand, and so don't quite know if they're going to hold on tight to his character. So next we have the flavor of the week before we get to the predictions. We have the top 10 heels of the 1980s. Now, Derek and I, we put this list together, and of course it took a lot of discussion. It took a lot of names to being thrown in the hat, names being tossed out, and a proper order for these top 10 heels of the 1980s. Now, a few of our criteria is just being a very villainous heel, being a very memorable heel, being engaged in very top build feuds in the 1980s, and a very memorable heel turn that led a heel or heels to be one of the top heels of the time and such a prominent heel in the moment. Now, a few of them, you know, had face runs in the 80s as well, but at the same time, they were such prominent top heels that they were so good at their craft of being a heel that they have to be recognized as one of the top 10 in the 1980s. So without further ado, let's go to number 10 is Jake the Snake Roberts. Now, Jake the Snake Roberts was really big in the Georgia Championship Wrestling and being a part of the original Legion of Doom. And, of course, that's where he invented his – he indirectly invented his DDT because he didn't mean to do it, but it worked. He did it anyways. And just really honed his craft as a heel. He first was a face, and he was actually teaming with Ricky Steamboat for a little bit. And when he went heel, it was it worked for him very, very well. And, of course, when he came to WWE in the mid-'80s, having such a great feud with Ricky Steamboat and, of course, the big thud that he did when he DDT'd Steamboat. And he had some really, really good moments as a heel. And just his villainous ways, his mic work, his very malignant, just demeanor to him. It was just a really good heel that he had. Just very, he was just very calloused and cold. And you could just really tell that by his promo work and just his overall cadence in the ring was very heel-like. Even when he was a face, he still had very heel ways to him. So definitely in the top 10, so we decided to put Roberts as number 10.
Roberts is number 10 just for the fact that he could cut a promo like nobody else. He had the mic work. Nobody can duplicate. He was like a psychological mind game player. He just absolutely almost put chills up your spine when he would talk. He had that demeanor. He made an awesome heel, like you'd mentioned, with a thud when he had knocked out Ricky the Dragon Steamboat with pretty much his debut with WWE after he was with Georgia Championship Wrestling for a while with the Legion of Doom. Jake the Snake Roberts absolutely one of the best. He could play a heel. He could play babyface. He could do either one. I preferred him as a heel just because he was really good at it, and again with the whole psychological thing, but he could be either one. He was an absolute awesome wrestler. He knew his role, but he was such a mind game player. He knew how to do that. Nobody else can duplicate that. Jake Snake Roberts, number 10, absolutely, 1980s.
Yes, number 9 goes to the Ace Cowboy, Bob Orton. He was just a true and true heel. He was just through and through, true to life heel. Of course, we all know him as his signature with his signature cast, his arm cast, and of course he was heavily involved in the first WrestleMania, and just a really, really good heel. Never really ascended to a main event level, but he always was that heel that you can count on to be thrusted in a top-tier match if you needed him to. And just his very raspy voice and his tactics throughout the 80s in the WWE just really honed his character as being just such a heel that wouldn't even make sense if he became a babyface. That's how good of a heel he was, and that's how good of a heel he acted. His persona really encapsulated what a heel should be.
Oh, it totally did. And he was in, like, the two biggest pay-per-views of the 80s. But he was Starrcade. He wasn't actually in the main event or anything, but he had a big playing that, being with Harley Race, trying to break Ric Flair's neck. And then he was in Piper's Corner with the cast in WrestleMania 1. He was there. He was always visible. You knew who Bob Orton was. And he just really carried out the heel persona. Like you said, he just there's no, he was never a babyface that I can remember in his heyday. It would make no sense. It would be stupid. He was just so good at what he did and just made everything look so easy with Harley Race and Starrcade and again with Piper and WrestleMania. The guy is a personified heel.
Indeed. Real quick trivia question. It says, what was Mike Tyson's title in WWE?
The baddest man on the planet. Baddest man on the planet.
Number eight goes to the guy that was born in Grenoble in the French Alps, Andre the Giant. Now, this is why we put him as number eight and not higher, because, again, this is the top heels of the 1980s, and Andre didn't turn heel until 87, leading into WrestleMania III. And before then, he was a babyface through and through. He was, WrestleMania II, of course. Well, WrestleMania I was the $25,000 slam match, and then II was the Battle Royal, and he was a face both of those times. And his big undefeated 15-year streak, he was the resident babyface everywhere that he went. And so he had such a good face run, and we had to put him on the list. Not high, because he wasn't just a babyface throughout the 80s, but, of course, he deserves to be on the list because he made, when he became a heel, he became one of the greatest heels in the WWE history because of that big, colossal match. And turning him heel for the sake of Hulk Hogan, of course, WrestleMania III being one of the most memorable WrestleManias of all time. So he had such a prominent role as a heel for WrestleMania III, and then as a heel continuing in the 80s, feuding with Dugan, feuding with Warrior, feuding with Jake Roberts, and he was a really, really good heel, and he really shined a lot of the mid-card baby faces, like I said, like the Roberts, like the Warrior. He was Intercontinental Championship when he went against them at a Saturday Night's Main Event, so he was still a mid-card face. So Warrior, Roberts, Dugan, and so he did a good job really shining those mid-card baby faces. And so he was a really, really good heel in the 80s. But at the same time, it was only a 3-year span. So that's the reason why he's not one of the top heels. But he had to be on the list, though.
He had to be on the list because, my biggest memories of Andre the Giant was him against Hulk Hogan. And so I just figured that this guy is just a genuine heel, and that's what he is. He's a big, massive bad guy, especially when you have million-dollar man Ted DiBiase just take you under his wing and say, I'll pay you money to get this belt. So that's my memory of Andre the Giant when he had on the singlet with the one-armed or one-shoulder strap. So, yeah, he definitely deserves to be on this. I get that he's not higher on it because, again, he was babyface a lot more than he was a heel. However, he was a pretty huge heel in the 1980s, and that's what this is about, Pancakes and Power Slam.
Absolutely. Very, very well said. Number seven goes to Sheiky Baby, the Iron Sheik. Just throughout the 80s, he was such a prominent heel throughout the first half of the 80s, more than the second half of the 80s. Although the second half of the 80s, he was still, towards the middle 80s, he was still a big name when him and Nikolai Volkoff were tag team champions. So he was still a big heel at that time. But, of course, his heyday came in the early 80s when he was WWE champion. And, of course, when he went against Hulk Hogan in 84, he was the heel that started the launch of Hulkamania. So he was such a huge name, both in the WWE at the time and the NWA. He was a big heel for both promotions. And so I remember when he had those big old clubs and he would swing them around in his workouts, and they would showcase that and do an exhibition. And they really pushed the Iron Sheik, and he had that anti-America, and when you successfully have an anti-American gimmick, as we saw with Slaughter in the early 90s, by the way, next week's Flavor Week topic is going to be just as exciting. It's going to be the top 10 heels of the 90s, so that'll be very fun as well. So, of course, you know, to give you a bit of a leak, Sergeant Slaughter, anti-American gimmick. If it works, if it's successful, you automatically, by default, become a very prominent heel. And that's exactly what happened with the Iron Sheik when he would say, he would say, Iran, number one, America, pwah! And so he had that heel, that automatic anti-patriotic, anti-American heel persona to him. So it worked, and it worked very well. He became world champion.
He became world champion, and I understand how that worked. As far as being a big anti-American, he wasn't a huge villain throughout the whole 80s, and I understand that but for the time that he was there, I mean, he was absolutely the most hated person in wrestling. 1980s, you got Hulk Hogan coming in there, the big American hero against the Iron Sheik. It was all about the Iranian prominence and everything. So I get it, and it's great. And he was huge in the 80s. I mean, he was a bad guy. I knew who he was. I had his little thumb wrestler when I was a kid where you'd put their thumb in the back.
Yeah, I did, too. I did, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, you knew that he was almost like the Joker or Lex Luthor, the Iron Sheik. Are you kidding me? This guy's a jerk. We need to get rid of him. So,
and, of course, the hook on the boot.
And the hook on the boot. Oh, man, that was – again, he deserves to be on this list. I'm all for it. And the Iron Sheik, even today, he's got these – his Twitter account. I mean, it's blowing up everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody loves the Sheik and hears rant.
Yeah, I mean, he – People love to hear Sheik shoot, for sure.
Yeah. This is about the 80s tonight. The Iron Sheik was the man as far as heels back in the 80s. He had the most heat than probably anybody on this list for the time.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with that. As far as a big ball of heat for a period of time, I definitely would agree with that. Good point there. Number six, Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig. He was such a cocky heel. See, the thing is with Curt Hennig, he really paved the way for cocky heels, for the Lanny Poffo, for the Geniuses, for the Damian Sandows, for the Dolph Zigglers. He really paved the way for the cocky heels that we've seen throughout the past, you know, 25 years in the WWE. So, and the promos were just amazing. The in-ring work was just amazing. Just the cockiness, just the huge inflated ego that he had was absolutely amazing. And even when he was in the AWA, he was a big babyface in the beginning, and then eventually he became just really brash, cocky, arrogant heel eventually when he won the AWA championship. So that was really his beginning. That was really his launch to the Mr. Perfect character, his days in the AWA. Really helped him out, and that was in the 80s as well. So just you can't say heel in the 1980s without saying Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig.
Oh, Mr. Perfect. I would, you know, honestly, I'd put him higher on the list after thinking about it. But, as far as him being the biggest jerk, I mean, he was a jerk. He was a smart aleck. And he brought that. He made it work. He made it funny. He made it to be like somebody like, this guy's a heel. I'm all about Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior, and blah, 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 ding, whatever. But anyway, this guy, he's a heel, but I loved it. He's hilarious. You want to see him. You want to hear him talk. You want to hear him do what he has to do. He was just so good at it. I mean, it was like going to see your grandpa or somebody. It's like, this is what he is. And you just to see Mr. Perfect, it was just absolutely amazing. He fit into the role so well. He was a diamond that just, he should have been more decorated than what he was, but he made the most of what he had. And absolutely, no wrestling fan can not know who Curt Hennig is.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Who did Iron Sheik beat for the WWE title? That was Bob Backlund. I guess we're doing a quiet, unannounced Stump the Host today through the chat room. But I love, as you know, as many people know, I love answering trivia questions. Who did he beat? He beat Bob Backlund. How did he win? Arnold Skaaland threw in the towel. He threw in the towel, and that's how he became the champion. And the good thing about Hennig, he wasn't ostentatious. He delivered. He delivered. What you saw is what you get. I mean, he was definitely true to life as far as him being such an amazing person in the ring. All right, real quick, we have number five. We have Rick Rude, Ravishing Rick Rude. I mean, this guy was such a pure heel. And again, he one of those brash, cocky, arrogant heels as well. But he backed up what he flaunted. He was such a good person. He was such a good wrestler in the ring, and just his feuds with Warrior, his feuds with Hogan. He was such a good heel, even his days in World Class Championship Wrestling in the early 80s, and going into the WWE, man, I mean, he was such a good heel. And of course, his feud with Jake Roberts over his wife, and just the feuds that he had in the 80s really just cemented him as one of the best heels of all time. I mean, we're doing 80s this week, but Rick Rude was one of the best heels of all time.
Oh, best heels of all time. Rick Rude, he was always a heel, and he was a heel with sex appeal. I mean, that's what he flaunted. He was every day. He was like the Charlie Sheen of wrestling. You know, he just absolutely came out just reeking of absolute machismo, and he mixed that with his wrestling. He was able to back it up, which is great. He had the body to do it, and he just always really... He always stole the show, pretty much, from pay-per-views and from mini wrestling. Because, I mean, he was just that great as far as being Intercontinental Champion and everything. He could have went on to be everything, world champion, just for the fact that he knew what he was doing and he had the absolute best persona that anybody would want. Who wouldn't want to be the heel with sex appeal? That's what he was.
Absolutely. Number four goes to Harley Race. Of course, you had the early Starrcade, Starrcade 83, when he went against Ric Flair. Of course, in the 70s, when he 75, when he won the U.S. Championship, he was a strong heel in the 70s as well. We chose Harley Race as being a heel in the 80s because he was such a prominent heel in the 80s as well, especially those very really just brutal matches that he had with Ric Flair in the early 80s. And even in the WWE when he went over there, he became King Harley Race. He wasn't as prominent. But still, when he had his feud with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, or as we would say, Dugan. Well, we got that from Mid-South announcer. Dugan, even that feud, you know, in the Slammy Awards when they were beating each other up the whole time. And just Harley Race in the 70s and the 80s was just a really, really good heel to have, for sure. And it's definitely one of the best heels of all time.
It was a great heel just for the fact in the 80s Starrcade, Ric Flair, in a steel cage match, tried to get his neck broken by who we mentioned earlier, Bob Orton, was a part of that. That was just the epitome of an old school guy handing it off to the new school guy, which at the time was Ric Flair, and the old school guy was Harley Race. But he made such a stink about it that he tried to make the bounty, and $25,000, I think, was the bounty at the time, which today is not as much. I mean, enough for me, I'd take it. But anyway.
Yeah.
But that just really set the boundary for an 80s heel. So, I mean, Harley Race, hats off to him.
Absolutely. Number three, Rowdy, Roddy Piper. And we were talking about Starrcade. He was a babyface going against when he was feuding with Greg Valentine in the NWA. But when he went to the WWE, he honed his character like never before. Piper's Pit and his feuds goes, the list goes on. And of course, you know, the biggest feud with Hogan at WrestleMania 1 and Mr. T with WrestleMania 2, and he was such a and Jimmy Snuka as well, and he was such a mean-spirited, just a rude heel, and he did such a fantastic job at it. He's just a true-to-life mean-spirited heel.
Mean-spirited heel, again, he made WrestleMania 1. He made Hulk Hogan look like a gem. I mean, he was that good of a heel. So, I mean, of course, he's got to be in the top. Roddy Piper, obviously, made WrestleMania 1 what the event that it was. Hulk Hogan was a babyface, but he could not have been as successful as he was without Piper.
Indeed. A couple minutes left before predictions. Real quick, guys. About 2 minutes left. Ted DiBiase, very, very clear. He was a heel throughout, through and through. He had some babyface work in Mid-South, but the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, a heel throughout the 80s, similar feuds throughout the 80s of the Hogans and the Roberts and just the one similar to the ones that the other big heels had. So definitely Ted DiBiase. Amazing heel at number two.
Number two, of course, Ted DiBiase. You got to put him up there. He was always a heel from the time he was in WWE until the time he left WWE. Absolutely an awesome heel. Again, somebody that made Hogan look wonderful.
Absolutely. And, of course, number one, there's not much to explain. The Nature Boy, Ric Flair. You can go on and on and explain why he's the number one heel of the 80s. He was the number one heel of all time.
All time. Slick Rick. Woo!
Absolutely. Real quick, Extreme Rules. We got Big E and Bad News Barrett. I got Big E continuing. Big E is going to – I got Big E winning. He's going to win.
Big E's going to win. It was a great tournament. I'm glad they did that, the IC Championship, but I can see Big E still beating Barrett.
Yes. WLC match, I've got Hornswoggle.
Yeah, Hornswoggle.
No. I've got El Torito. El Torito's going to win.
El Torito, again, who cares?
Bray Wyatt and Cena. I've got Cena. Wyatt's going to take this one.
Wyatt will probably win just because Cena's down on his luck and hates the WWE fans and he wants to cry about it. So, but I hope that this was it. This will be the last match between the two.
Indeed. Paige and Tamina Snuka, of course, Paige is going to win.
She's awesome with the WWE title. I want to keep that thing going because the Divas need that.
Rusev, real quick. Rusev's against Zay Rose and Truth. I got Rusev winning.
Yeah, me too.
Swagger, RVD, Cesaro. I got Cesaro winning.
Of course, Cesaro's going to win. That's his time.
Indeed. Daniel Bryan and Kane. Of course, Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan's going to win. Yes. It's going to keep growing.
Absolutely. Real quick, 10 seconds. Evolution, the Shield. The Evolution will put the Shield over. The Shield will shine.
Yes. And we're going to find out Monday Night Raw just how great they shine.
Absolutely. Great show. CraveWrestling@gmail.com. Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Enjoy Extreme Rules and enjoy a week of wrestling. We'll be back next week with the Extreme Rules recap. Day loves Elijah. Have a great week. God bless. Goodbye.